Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Ramble Reacts. A big away win for 10-man Arsenal. It's Tuesday, 22nd of August. I'm Marcus Speller.
And I'm still Luke Moore.
Welcome, one and all, to another Ramble Reacts. Luke Moore, here we are. We find ourselves looking at the scoreline, Crystal Palace 0, Arsenal 1 from last night's game. Roy Hodgson had a little smile on his face when he embraced Mikel Arteta at the end of the game. But it was Arteta who looked absolutely delighted.
He was pumped
to get those 3 points.
He was absolutely pumped, wasn't he?
He was.
And it's nice to see Roy. Can I first of all just say it's nice to see Roy? We talked about this yesterday at great length, and to see the man stepping out for his first Selhurst Park appearance of the season. Nice of them to parade him around the stadium at the start and have him... you want me to carry on that one, though? It was a great opportunity to see the big man.
Lucky for Roy, it wasn't a barn burner.
It wasn't.
Where else would he live?
Well, he would fly over, just dropping... little tumblers of water onto the fire.
He'd find a different barn to live in.
I thought it was a kind of job to be done for Arsenal. I don't mean that to be disrespectful to Crystal Palace, but if you cast your mind back to the opening game of last season, Arsenal found themselves at Selhurst Park, got out of there with a 2-0 win on that occasion, and it was kind of followed up by three or four results of which they won every single game, including one of your beloved Fulham, where they've had to dig out. And that would kind of set the platform for their season last season. If you think of that that Fulham game, Marcus, they went a goal behind, didn't they? Mitrovic scored, and they turned it around and scored a few minutes to go and got the win. Then after that, they had to kind of scrape past Villa. My point being that just early last season, when they had a very good season, they didn't have it all their own way against Crystal Palace at Selhurst Park, and they managed to win. I thought it was a It rapidly turned into one of those games where you just got to get the win. And I think you can tell they felt that way as well by the way not just Arteta celebrated at the final whistle, but the players on the pitch did as well. That might well be because they went down to 10 men in rather unfortunate fashion. But at the same time, you know, Crystal Palace have got players who can hurt you, unpredictable players, attacking players who can pull something out of nothing. And that always leaves you kind of a little bit uncertain. And so to get through that, I think... Was a great plus point for them.
Yeah. We had a tweet from Rob who said, huge away win for Arsenal against David Coote.
another bird.
Yeah. Title challenger stuff is what Rob said.
Coote is a magnificent bird. Got very bright blue, large feet. It's an aquatic bird. You see them a lot in ponds around the local parks in the UK. But if you ever get a chance to see them out of the water, very large, bright blue feet. It's quite unusual.
Are you sure? Because the coots are the ones... Moorhens have got the red beak.
Correct.
And coots have got the white beak.
Correct. Yeah, black with the white beak.
They've got blue feet.
Bright blue feet, yeah.
Blimey O'Reilly, they hide them well. Why do they hide their feet under a feathery... Why do they hide their feet under a feathery bushel?
I don't know. There's probably some kind of evolutionary reason, Marcus.
If we're going to be a little bit expansive and a bit showy with our bird chat, Luke Moore, a very famous breed.
Talking about referees, isn't it?
a very famous... And they said breed of bird. They don't really breed them. Type of bird that I've seen with blue feet is the blue-footed booby.
Yeah, very famous bird of I believe native to Southern Africa, I believe.
Certainly in the Galapagos Islands.
Oh,
Ecuador.
Okay, you're right. Yeah, the Pacific Ocean. Yeah, I've just checked. I thought they were from the African savannah, but you're right. Yeah, they're Pacific. I mean, let me just be absolutely clear on that. Sorry to cut you off if you were going to go into detail on that particular species, but what I would say is the blue-footed boobies.
They holiday in Southern Africa, don't they?
I'm sure they do. I'm sure that's the case. I mean, why wouldn't you? But that bright blue set of feet is far brighter and far more vivid than the humble UK-based coot. I mean, you've taken it up a notch there. If I was to recommend anything to our listeners about, you know, kind of sampling, you know, birds with blue feet, I would say very much start off with the coot and build your way up to the blue-footed booby, because that's probably the apex, the apotheosis of what you're going to get when it comes to blue-footed birds. It's really important that I make that clear.
Well, I think, and I'm glad you did, because I didn't want to waste any more of our time. I thought you've mentioned the coot's feet. Let's just move on to the
questions I'm
booby.
Asked.
Exactly.
That's all I'm doing.
We can wrap that little bird chat up in a neat little package and move on. But of course, David Coote was the referee. He sent Tomiyasu off two yellow cards, the first for time wasting and then the second for pulling. Was it Ayu's shirt? I think it was. And it seemed very harsh. And that really is, I suppose you would say, the big talking point of the game in terms of moments.
A few penalty shouts.
There was a few penalty shouts, but this it seemed very harsh to me. I mean, Alan Smith said, look, I'm not saying this with my Arsenal colours on or anything, but he felt it was harsh in, you know, co-coms. I didn't think it was a second yellow. I understand why the referee's given it. If he thinks that's a shirt pull, then that is... the dictionary definition of a yellow card.
Yeah.
But it is very frustrating that VAR can't overturn a yellow card and therefore obviously a second yellow card. And I think I'd like to see the rules change with that. Of course, people would then argue, well, hang on a minute, then you've got to do it for yellow cards in general. So I get that they don't want the admin for that. But when you see what happened to Tomiyasu, to me, the forward player has got him sent off there.
Well, it's also, of course, a hugely consequential decision, potentially.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's the problem, isn't it? On one hand, you make the point, I think, which is fair, that, you know, that is involved descending off and markedly affects the game. But at the same time, you're opening a can of worms if you do that yellow, because then you could argue the first yellow also contributes to the red, and therefore you have to do all of the yellows. I thought it was a poor decision. I mean, ultimately, the way to solve this problem would just be for referees to not make stupid errors like that, which I know is easy for me to say. But we're already seeing... Even earlier than predicted, I don't know if you remember, Marcus, but a week or so ago, we talked about the idea of how long referees are going to keep up this this kind of new initiative to clamp down on dissent, to clamp down on these other things. And I'm just off the top of my head from this weekend's football alone. I mean, Thomas Partey does an imaginary card and isn't booked.
Mm-hmm.
Grealish did one as well, I think, against Newcastle. He wasn't booked. Bruno was booked for dissent in the Spurs game, which we talked about yesterday. And then Alexis McAllister was also booked for waiving an imaginary card in the Liverpool game. And so already we're seeing that referees are starting to implement this stuff as and when they see fit, but not implementing it consistently. And to me, there is a problem with people calling out for consistency of refereeing and then common sense refereeing as well, because obviously those things don't always go hand in hand. Different referees, different occasions, different types of games and all the rest of it. But if you are going to put a big statement out or make it clear or brief the media that you're going to be clamping down this, that and the other, and then not even 2.5 weeks into the season, we're already seeing it not being implemented consistently. Mm-hmm. It's just frustrating, and it's just an own goal by them, because it makes every kind of decision they make that's wrong, i.e. the Tomiyasu thing, give people far less opportunity to give them the benefit of the doubt. I thought it was a poor decision. I thought the game was refereed kind of okay-ish. I didn't think it was quite as bad as has been mentioned. I don't think it was quite as bad as Rob, who tweeted in, said, but I don't think it was brilliant either. All I would say is that there was also a lot of trickery in the penalty area in that game. A lot of kind of players going to ground quite easily. Nketiah did it. Eze arguably did it, although I appreciate there was probably contact there. It does make the referee's job harder. So I don't know how you feel about that, Marcus, because ultimately you're muddying the waters on behalf of the referee, trying to make him make all these decisions when you're basically just trying to trick him. So that doesn't make it easier either, does it?
With regards to the penalties, I mean, the Eze one, when he sort of slalomed between two defenders, I think if that's given, VAR wouldn't overturn it.
I agree. It's like the Tim Ream thing we talked about yesterday.
No, that shouldn't have been given. And no, but you know what I mean? The line Luke like Moore.
I hope he gets a big ban, Ream, by the way. Massive ban. That's a 10-gamer for me.
Yeah. Are you mates from Mitrovic, right? Another couple of games.
Two yellows, that's 5 games.
Exactly. Yeah. Talking back. Yeah. Keep talking. Yeah. I mean, when you've got players who with pace and trickery running in the box, it is quite difficult to see. But I thought he had a good game. I thought the Arsenal one was a penalty.
I thought he got
that right. And that was the other moment that really changed the game. I mean, this you said at the start, you know, you talked about it, or we did, it was a huge 3 points for Arsenal. Reminds me a little bit of when Man City went there last season. I think they got a penalty. I think, would it have been Haaland perhaps who scored? Forgive me if that's incorrect. But they won 1-0 at Selhurst Park last season. And it reminded me of that Crystal Palace can be a very, very difficult side to play against, not only because they're good at the back, but they've also got something good going forward as well. And you've got, they ask questions. But, you know, 2 games in, they've only scored 1 goal.
Yeah.
I don't think it's panic stations. They beat Sheffield United. They could have won that game by more than 1 goal. And they've lost at home to the side who finished second and have strengthened since then. So, It's nothing to be too worried about. But with Palace, you know, you mentioned the other day, I think it was yourself or Jim, that a player like Eze and Elise, when he's, you know, signed that new contract, it's a time for those players to kind of shine, especially as Zaha is no longer there. Do you worry about Palace and where the goals may come from?
Yeah, I think you have to, because I think that, you know, if you talk about individual goal scorers for them, then it tends to be like Zaha would have chipped in with, I don't know, generally like a decent amount, and by which I mean, I don't know, between 8 and 12 Premier League goals off the top of my head. And then it would be punctuated by, well, Eze got like 10 last season, didn't he, which is pretty decent. Ayew, I think, has had a season where he scored a few. I think Benteke might have scored quite a few one season. But it's never really troubling, you know, 20 goals. It's always generally around double figures or maybe slightly more. And now, of course, Zaha's moved on, which leaves a huge amount of pressure on someone like Eze, because the strikers they have, like Edouard and whoever else, just don't seem to contribute as much. And if you looked at Palace, scored, I think, 40 goals last season, so around just over a goal a game. But teams around them,
I mean, Chelsea probably is a bit of a weird one because they're an anomaly last season, weren't they? They only scored a goal a game last season. Wolves hardly scored any. But the teams directly above them, Fulham and Brentford, who I think teams you could probably, you know, reasonably argue are teams that Palace should really kind of be benchmarking themselves against.
Yeah.
You know, Fulham scored 55 and Brentford scored 58. So yeah. It's a massive difference. I mean, you're talking about, in Brentford's case, almost 50% more goals. So, yeah, it's a concern. I don't think, having said that, I don't think Crystal Palace will spend too much time worrying about losing at home to Arsenal in that fashion. I think they gave a reasonable account of themselves, had a little bit of the ball as well, didn't they? It just didn't happen for them, and Arsenal are a better team. That's okay. I don't think that's the end of the world. But you know, from Arsenal's point of view, I think it's 3 points. You know, well won. And I'd also just say as well that, you know, I find that Eddie Nketiah quite an interesting character.
Yeah, I agree. I was going to say, let's turn our attention to Arsenal's attacking lineup, because Nketiah, he can be very exciting when he gets the ball. I mean, that moment where he burst into the box and he switched foot and side-footed against the post. Great shame that never went in, because it would have been a beautiful bit of striking, or forward play, should I say. But yet he did miss one or two chances in that game. And last season, Arsenal, we know they ran Man City fairly close, but in the end it was fairly comfortable. They have Erling Haaland up front, and it's harsh to compare or to contrast that the Haaland with Nketiah. But that is the reality of the situation. He is Arsenal's main striker.
Until Jesus comes back,
if indeed he plays through the middle, which he may or he may not. You know, Arteta may mix it up. You think about Manchester City, who they've got up there. Well, Julian Alvarez has just won a World Cup. And is full of confidence, and is now, you know, you see in the they're reaping the rewards. I mean, that goal he took against Newcastle United was a great strike, you know. So Nketiah, certainly for the moment, and could for the most part lead Arsenal's attacking line. Arsenal have got goals all over the pitch, we need to say. But what do you make of Nketiah up front for Arsenal? Because, as I say, an exciting player, but is it a stretch too far to think Arsenal could win the league if he is one of their starting strikers?
Well, it's a tough old ask, because he's 24 years old, and I think he's only ever scored 15 Premier League goals in his whole career.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know he's spent a bit of time on loan, and he's found it hard to break into the team consistently, but he's not 18. He's 24, right? And I think when I look at him as a player, I think movement brilliant. He's got a lot of speed. Like, he's quick across like a few yards, and his runs are intelligent. So, like I say, his movement's good. And he was a thorn in Crystal Palace's side all night last night. They couldn't deal with him. He's quick thinking for that penalty. It wasn't just the fact that it was quick off the mark. It's just that he had the thought process to get in there for that, from that set piece, and do something that Palace defenders couldn't react to. And then the goalkeeper's never really going to get there as quickly, because they're nowhere near as quick, goalkeepers. And once the goalkeeper's committed, I mean, it's curtains, really. But the problem is, as you touched on, he doesn't score goals. Like, his finishing isn't good enough, and so I'm not really one for the big stats, as you know. But I think there's only one player last season who scored, you know, a bigger discrepancy between his XG and his actual goals, and that was Kai Havertz, who also plays for Arsenal. Yeah. but Nketiah was, I think, if you put any stock in XG stats, for example, I think his XG was 8 last season, he scored 4. So, I mean, he's 50% lower than he should be. I don't want to spend too much time worrying about that, because I do think he's got so many different tools in his toolbox that maybe the school of thought is that ultimately he builds a bit of confidence, he gets a few more games on his belt, and those goals start going in, or he never looks back. Or you might think he's just not quite good enough in terms of a finisher.
Yeah, I think Nketiah, there's great,
I think he's
hope
better
there
than a lot of people say he is, though.
I agree with that. I think he's got something about him. And he doesn't lack confidence. You saw that with the little sort of chip or scoop or whatever dink he tried against Johnston in goal, and obviously it went over the bar. Now, he's missed, for crying out loud.
I thought
that
was a poor decision, though, you know.
It was a poor decision, but it shows you a bit of confidence there. Now, of course, if he keeps doing that, that's how you lose confidence.
Yeah.
But he does look like he's got confidence. And I think that because of that, and because of his body language, when he wants the ball, you know, he's got a bit of trickery and pace about him as well. I like the fact that he wants to play through the middle, because he a player with his tools could hide out on the wing. He doesn't want to do that. He wants to be down the middle. And so I'm hopeful, on behalf of Arsenal fans, that he does come good and start scoring goals. But if you want to be challenging for league titles, you can't really have a guy up top who are, well, hopefully he'll come good.
So if you look at the players that Arsenal have signed this season, Declan Rice, okay, fine, that's a massive signing for them. And you know, that really speaks for, speaks for itself. They went after David Raya and they got him because they could get him. And obviously that's been confusing to a lot of people. I'm not quite as confused as the entire football fraternity wants to, appears to want to call the police on Arteta for doing it. And always, you should always be wary of pundits that are always confused.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to say that Palace are apparently interested in Dean Henderson.
Well, Hendo makes sense because he's an upgrade on Sam Johnson, who's played, he played last night. But my point is, Marcus,
you don't want to disrespect your number one goalkeeper. Look, this is something that we've all learned in this year.
He might be a bit unsettled, and that's unacceptable. but Marcus, why do you think Arsenal haven't gone after... my point was just going to be, it was a very laboured way of saying they've gone after players, they've spent money, they've shown themselves prepared to put their hand in their pocket for players they really want to the tune of quite a lot of money. Why has it not manifested itself in a forward player who's going to score goals? Is it because they just think with Nketiah and Jesus they're covered?
Yeah, well, it must be. It must be. I mean,
and that's
perhaps
a gamble. Because of Jesus' injury record and Nketiah's goalscoring record.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps they were sniffing around other players and then and nothing was there.
Imagine if they did that. Open. Actually, was actually sniffing around them.
Yeah, I
just like that. Oh, I think he wants to sign me.
Ooh, what a lovely cologne that is. there, I tell you what, they'd be a great selling club if you were literally sniffing players. FC Köln. I think, but they've got goals in the side. Arsenal. I mean, Bukayo Saka is one side, Gabriel Martinelli is the other side. They chip in with a lot, so I think that they prioritise the midfield and one or two other areas. You know, defensive. I mean, defensive cover is what they needed. That was one of the big things last season, of course. That your friend and mine and everyone's, of course, Rob Holding came in and he's not quite cutting the mustard there when they had big injury to. Was it Saliba towards the end of last season and so on. So they have strengthened in that area, you would say. Oh, by the way, a little word on Bukayo Saka. Made his 82nd consecutive league appearance for Arsenal, which equals the Arsenal's Premier League record.
Yeah,
with
Paul Merson, right? Yeah.
Remarkable stuff.
Oh, Saka's an all-time... Saka will be an all-time player for Arsenal. I mean, the amount he's achieved at the age he is already is incredible. Massively important player for them, arguably their most important player. I know people will have a shout out for Odegaard and Martinelli and perhaps one or two others for that, but I mean, Saka, it's very hard to make an argument that Saka's not the most important player, and he's got a lot of pressure on his shoulders and he's been so good. And that is a great stat to show his consistency. I mean,
incredible,
because ultimately, you know, getting on the pitch and playing every single game is half the battle, really, with the amount of games, you know, players are being asked to play and the amount of pressure on their bodies and stuff. It's an incredible, incredible achievement.
Before we move on, I just wanted to say that, did you not think it was nice to see some former Palace players sitting with Steve Parrish at the game, Mark Bright, Gareth Southgate and Alan Pardew? I'd put it to you, Luke Moore. Kiss, marry, kill.
Yeah, I think I'd probably marry Gareth.
Yeah.
I'd kiss Mark Bright.
Yeah.
And yeah, and the rest is history.
And the rest is obvious.
You know the rest.
Yeah.
I think I'd probably kiss Mary and then kill Alan Pardew.
Yeah. Pards would be a bit sad there, you know, because if there's some getting off to be done, you'd think he would be...
Don't say that. Don't say that. You know the one thing about Alan Pardew people don't realise, by the way, Marcus?
Lovely cologne.
Very
smells
bright
great.
Blue feet. Take his socks off, his bright blue feet.
Yeah. The blue-footed booby that is Alan Pardew. Now, we know that Roy Hodgson, of course, is the king of post-match interviews. We've enjoyed, especially when they don't go out live and we have to wait for them to be released after that. Did you see Lyon manager Laurent Blanc, formerly of Manchester United, had an interesting attitude at the weekend after Lyon started the season with a second straight defeat, and he was asked what needs to be changed at the team or at the club, and he said, you have to change the manager. It's like, Lauren, do you realise you...
So kind of 3D chess he's playing there.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's not a translation error, that, is it? He did say that.
I don't
think
so. I think maybe written into his contract was if he, like, sacks himself or something, then maybe he gets a payout.
I thought it was going to be like a terrible like French joke where he's going to say, you have to change the manager, then turn around and come back in and he's put like a little fake moustache on. Gone, here I am.
That'd be good.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This episode of the Football Ramble is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life throws many different challenges at us, and as a result, we all have our own sources of stress. Whether big or small, those stresses can impact our lives in unpredictable ways, and if we don't address them, they can have an outsized and unwanted impact. Therapy is a safe place in which we can address these issues, learn to understand them, and find ways to work through them. Having therapy can be beneficial to anybody, not just people who've experienced major traumas, even if you may have not considered it before. It could be simply a time for you to get things off your chest, a way to learn positive coping skills, or how to set boundaries. Ultimately, it can be whatever you need it to be. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and BetterHelp will match you to a licensed therapist. You can even switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Now then, let us finish today's Ramble Reacts with the news that Mason Greenwood is set to leave Manchester United after the club finally decided he must resume his footballing career elsewhere. As of last Wednesday, they intended to reintroduce him into the squad, but by late Friday afternoon, the public reaction had forced a rethink. And yesterday, they announced the conclusion of their six-month investigation into Greenwood's conduct with the following statement. Based on the evidence available to us, we have concluded that the material posted online did not provide a full picture and that Mason did not commit the offences in respect of which he was originally charged. That said, as Mason publicly acknowledges today, he has made mistakes which he is taking responsibility for. All those involved, including Mason, recognise the difficulties with him recommencing his career at Manchester United. It has therefore been mutually agreed that it would be most appropriate for him to do so away from Old Trafford, and we will now work with Mason to achieve that outcome. Luke, you weren't on the podcast last week when we spoke about this, but you did tweet what I thought was quite an eloquent thread after we spoke about it on the Ramble. What do you make of that statement?
Yeah, I don't really believe Manchester United, and I haven't believed them throughout this process. I think they've come to the right decision to have him leave the club. And at the time of recording, I mean, you know, Adam Crafton of The Athletic, who's really been, you know, in the vanguard of covering this and really, you know, got into the weeds of what's happened and what United's process has been, has reported they haven't actually terminated his contract, but other outlets have suggested that his contract has been mutually terminated. Regardless, they've come to what is ultimately the right decision to have him leave the club, in my view. But it feels like they've done it in a kind of mutually convenient way without really showing any leadership, and they've made no statement of intent throughout the process or how it relates to the outcome. I think for me, from the start, they've approached this from a position of how can we get through this without losing Mason Greenwood as a player?
Yeah.
And that has informed their thinking really throughout. And the club statements from United and from Richard Arnold are, to me, like incoherent and nonsensical. Mm. I mean, for example, we have collated evidence that led us to conclude that Mason did not commit the offences he was charged with. Well, what is that evidence then? Tell us, because that would solve the problem entirely, but you don't seem to be forthcoming with it. And they also had no one involved at the club with any experience or expertise whatsoever in being able to make that assessment anyway, mm-hmm. with the exception of probably some in-house counsel who will almost certainly not be involved in criminal cases day to day. And they didn't hire anyone independent to lead the inquiry either, which to me is a dereliction of duty. On that front, I guess I agree with Gary Neville. The situation was way above the pay grade of anyone at the club, and leaving it to employees to conduct the inquiry is a conflict of interest, as well as like incredibly unfair for those employees in question. Mm-hmm. So like I say, ultimately they've come to the right decision, but have done it in my view quite a Weasley way, and they come out of it with no credit whatsoever. And I'll just finish by saying that, you know, you alluded to mentioned my Twitter thread there. For those who haven't seen it, you know, because they've got better things to be doing with their life than spending all their life on Twitter, which is perfectly understandable. I think we need a code of conduct for players and officials within the game, and we need an independent process that covers cases such as this, because this won't be the last time this happens. Mm-hmm. And there's currently a vacuum at the top of the game when it comes to leadership on these issues. It's not viable to hide behind the idea that there wasn't a criminal case to answer. That's a totally different level of burden of proof and process, and just a completely different stratosphere.
And the charges were dropped, by the way. It wasn't as if it went to the courts and he was found.
And that's not really guilty. That relevant to the day-to-day running of a sport or an industry anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you can be capable of such terrible behaviour that brings the industry and the club and the whatever into disrepute without reaching the criminal or threshold for criminal charges or whatever. But you know, listen, there's loads of other professions in this country. And you can, you know, list a load of them off, you know, whether it's law or accountancy or medicine or whatever, where there's a minimum standard of behaviour, and they're bringing the profession into disrepute type idea that exists, that is, you know, regularly counselled upon and judged upon by independent panels, and people are struck off and not allowed to practice certain professions because of it. And I don't really see, with the stakes involved and with the fact that they're professionals as well, football players, professional athletes, why there shouldn't be something in place for that as well, because ultimately then that just takes the decision making away from people who aren't qualified to make that decision. And I just think with United, it's, as I said, it's been informed by them being desperate not to lose a player to a rival, which is pretty tawdry. But these players are, you know, valuable assets, and that's the reality of the world we live in. So that's kind of mishmash of my thoughts, a summary of my thoughts, really. They've come to the right decision, in my view. It remains to be seen what will happen next. It's kind of unthinkable that he'll go to another Premier League club, I think, after all this, but he will go somewhere else. But they've come to it in a really roundabout way, having exhausted all opportunities that they thought they could get to try and keep him. And now they can't. They can't get away with it, so they're not getting away with it.
Yeah, and the public outcry has been huge, and not just from the public. Also, according to some reports, employees at the club were like, "No, we're not having this. I'm afraid."
Yeah,
and it is interesting. Then, and as you say, like for you know, whatever one may think, you know, the club have listened to them, and I don't give them any credit for that necessarily, for the reasons you've just stated. One's voice can be heard, which is, I suppose, you know,
it's encouraging in a way. The outcry itself is quite encouraging. Apart from the people on all the virgins on Twitter, there's a lot of generally speaking, the public consensus. Yeah. I think it's been relatively positive overall. Yeah. I would say
it will be unlikely, as you say, he pops up at another Premier League club. Probably unlikely that he pops up at another English club. You know, we shall see. But it is the right outcome, I think. I think we're all agreed on this podcast, and let's hope that this brings in some regulation or some guidelines, some wisdom, for crying out loud, and into the Premier League.
I suspect it won't, but I think it's actually the football's shown itself utterly incapable of being able to run itself, and it's just desperately clinging on to the idea of being able to do so in many different ways, whether that be financially or ethically or whatever. Mm-hmm. To me, it does need some kind of independent governance. I think it's been that way for a while, regardless of this of this Mason Greenwood thing. But you know, look, ultimately, the behaviour that Mason Greenwood's exhibited, which you know, it hasn't even really been questioned. I mean, they say all these things, like I say, in nonsensical statements about how they've conducted their own investigation, they've collated evidence which showed this and that and the other. Well, let's just see it then. Because if you see it, if we can see it, then the whole thing goes away. Mm. But obviously that's not forthcoming.
Well,
so you can only draw one's own conclusion from that, and so we can only work with the information we've got. And so as long as we do that, the outcome that they've stumbled upon, really, which is what they've done, is the only possible outcome. And you know, really, there's far bigger things at play here than just, you know, the potential loss of a player who's quite good at football, because ultimately that's no barometer of what, you know, what should and shouldn't happen. What should and shouldn't happen is what's thorough and what's decent and what people expect in society. And you know, this is a wider, Mason Greenwood is the tip of an iceberg of a wider sickness in our society around domestic violence and violence towards women. The numbers are staggering. I mean, it's mm-hmm. incredible and sickening how much this goes on. As a general point, and like I say, Mason Greenwood is a very, very small but very prominent example of that. So I mean,
Well, I mean, it's interesting because that quote that Gordon Strachan came out with a number of years ago.
In 2014, it was in Brazil in the World Cup,
That's right. He said, you know, football is full of people who are, and then lists off some undesirable characteristics and types, if you like.
He said, as a sport, we have no morals whatsoever. Let's get that absolutely right.
Yeah, and so, you know, people often look to football for some sort of example, rightly or wrongly, but it's a huge thing in the public conscious. It's a huge thing in the culture, so that it will be looked at. And often, we in football we say, well, the problem is with whether it be violence towards women or sexism, racism, or whatever. You know, it's not football's problem; it's a societal issue. Fine, but football can get its own house in order.
Absolutely,
and go, actually, as you said, Luke, this is what we expect from people.
Absolutely,
okay. It's again, I can't stress it's in the public eye, and that does matter.
Yeah. Yeah, nothing more to add. I totally agree with you.
We'll see if there's any more chat about that in the coming days, of course. And but that's what the story was released today. So there we are, everybody. But thank you very much for listening to today's Ramble Reacts. We'll be back tomorrow with another episode of the Football Ramble. Of course, in the meantime, find us on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube at Football Ramble. And remember to subscribe on your podcast app. There we are, everybody. Thank you very much, Luke Moore.
Thank you very much. See you soon.
See you soon, everybody. Laura Love.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.